I could take out of my life everything except my experiences at St. Andrew, and I still have a rich, full life.
But the last tee shot I hit was more like it, that one in the playoff.
Against Barton and Ray.
That's right.
And the best thing to win the Masters, you will be here forever, as long as you are still alive, so that's the best thing. I'm very happy.
Welcome to episode 116 of the Talking Golf History Podcast, and part two of the Myths of the Masters. We welcome back golf historian Greg Lamb, who turns the tables on me and makes me a guest on my own show. Today we finish off our two-part podcast, and the last myth might be the greatest myth of them all, or perhaps the greatest story of our time, certainly worthy of another sequel to the Indiana Jones franchise. Do you enjoy Talking Golf History? If so, please consider signing up for our free weekly newsletter for entertaining golf stories that you won't find anywhere else. You can sign up at www.thesocietyofgolfhistorians.beehiv.com/subscribe. The best part is, you can view all old newsletters and search for stories you want to read. Without further ado, let's dive into episode 116. I rewind the clock to the last interview question to find out whether you can become a member of Augusta National merely by getting a hole-in-one on the course. Enjoy. There is a belief that if you get a hole-in-one on, I've heard, the 12th hole or any hole at Augusta National, you're invited to become a member of the club. What do you think of that one, Greg?
That one I have a hard time believing. I think this is where we get into your segment on myths and facts. So I'll kind of jump into the questions here.
Yeah, I'll tell you this one. It is completely false. A friend of mine got a hole-in-one on the 12th hole. Mark, I'll just use his first name. And by the way, there's probably not a better hole to get a hole-in-one on, specifically at Augusta National, but maybe anywhere. And also a fun fact, he is not a member of Augusta National years later. So that one's 100% false. I mean, geez, how much more pressure would that put on you as a guest of Augusta National if you thought if you got a hole-in-one, you were going to become a member?
Well, I mean, I've heard that through other people, and I've always thought that, yeah, I think there's some other criteria that probably falls along with that, but I would imagine, I know some of the collegiate golfers that get to play Augusta National, I know that they are not offered membership after they make a hole in one.
I don't know if any club in the world would have such a trivial way to make somebody a member by getting a hole in one. I could just see, you know, some person hitting a ball off of a tree, it then hits a rock and then goes in the hole, and they're like, you're a member. You know, it's absolutely false, folks.
Yeah, part of your vetting process is that you have to get a hole in one.
That's right. There's only 20 members at Augusta because there's only 20 people who've got a hole in one there.
That is so funny.
That'd be similar to say, if you hit the ball in the water, you lose your membership at Augusta National.
Exactly. I just think that is an amazing thing. But I do hear it. It pops up every year, and we hear it from multiple media outlets. But as you and I both know, that is absolutely false.
I will tell you, my buddy Mark is very upset that that is a false thing. He would love to be a member.
All right, Connor, I'll get into the next one. There are a series of underground tunnels throughout Augusta National. Is that a truth or a fact?
That's true. I definitely have not seen them all. What I will say, one of the coolest things about those tunnels, or at least the tunnels that I've gone through, they are elaborate and beautiful. I mean, these are not, I mean, I'm sure, you know, I guess you could use them, quote unquote, as, you know, someone might use the maintenance tunnel, but these things are literally a work of art. And
they
what's
really
even,
are. And I've seen
isn't
the,
it? Yeah.
The rock. Yeah.
Rock, and it's got, I mean, it usually has vines and flowers around it. It is
an architectural gem of tunnels that go throughout that property.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And like we said before, I mean, no detail is left, you know, by itself there. I mean, that they cover everything. And like you said, even if they just built the tunnel, it looks like it's been there for, you know, 20 plus years in that pristine condition. It's just amazing.
Even crazier to that point is, and I think people have brought this up, the amount of time, or say lack of time, that Augusta National has to add in a tunnel or add in a new press building or add an addition to or renovate the clubhouse. All those things are done in the off season for them. That construction is not going on when members are playing the club or obviously during the tournament. So this window to, you know, develop and build design buildings and tunnels is really, it's like one of the seventh wonders of the world, what they're able to accomplish in that short period of time. And by the time the members come back to the club, when it opens up again after the summer, you wouldn't know any of those things happened.
No, and the locals there in Augusta will tell you, if Augusta National was over the roads and everything there in Augusta, it would just be a utopia because everything gets done. Everything looks immaculate. I know from personal experience, we've been going there quite often over the last year, and we have noticed where Augusta National has been purchasing property there on Washington Road, and you can tell the difference in the grass of where it's someone else's property and then Augusta National because of the green of the grass. And I know we talk about the green of Augusta National a lot, but even on the outside on Washington Road where they've purchased this property, there is no doubt in your mind that Augusta National owns that because of the grass, the landscaping, the way it's so well manicured, the pine straw, the trees. It's just phenomenal. So
it's gorgeous.
Exactly. So we'll get into the next one here, Connor. Ronald Reagan was held hostage at Augusta National Golf Club. Is that a myth or true?
You know, it's a myth, but it was really close to being true. You could argue that it was two holes from being true, maybe three. So, a gentleman, this is back on October 22nd, 1983. A gentleman by the name of Charlie Harris was upset about, I want to say it was the steel industry in PA laying off thousands of workers. And over the news, somehow he had heard that President Ronald Reagan was playing golf at Augusta National, and he took his pickup truck and drove through the gates of Augusta National with a gun and went into the pro shop and held seven people hostage. I believe two of them were part of Ronald Reagan's staff and demanded to talk to Ronald Reagan face to face. And of course, I think Reagan, if I remember this right, was on the 16th hole. And of course, the Secret Service were not going to allow Ronald Reagan to see somebody with a gun face to face. So they brought out a car and got him off property. Now, what's interesting is President Reagan tried to call the pro shop from the car to, you know, talk this gentleman down. One shot was fired in the clubhouse. I believe it was in through the floor. Nobody was injured, thank God. And this man was arrested and sent to jail. Weirdly enough, I haven't written the fourth newsletter, but that might be in the fourth newsletter, the story of this gentleman who, oddly enough, was not incarcerated for his entire life. He was let out after what I would deem to be a very short period of time for trying to, you know, take a gun to go see the president. But he passed away years ago. I was kind of hoping that he'd still be alive and to see if I could, you know, interview him because I was just curious his side of the story. But unfortunately, he passed away years ago, and that story probably died with him.
It probably did, yeah. All right, well, always great information. We'll get into the next one. The television production pipes in bird noises during the tournament.
Yes, I've heard this one. And I get where it's coming from. I truly do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll tell you, like, I think the answer is no. But let's put it this way. I've been told the answer is no, but I get how people come to that conclusion. It'd be interesting to know, and maybe you know, but, you know, were the bird noises recorded well in advance on the property?
Right.
And that's what you hear throughout the, but that's one that still, I don't know. Do you know any more, Greg?
Well, on the bird noises, I know that there are birds around Augusta National. You'll hear everything in the world. I've heard some people say that they have supersonic like waves that basically keep birds off the property. That's not true. I've seen birds land all over the driving range and be out there during the driving range during a practice round. So that's happened quite often. I think there may be lulls, and this is all what if. So we can't call this a truth. We can't call it a myth. We just have speculation at this one. I really believe that at sometimes golf is a very quiet sport, and there at Augusta National, it is very quiet with those patrons. It's amazing that you can be around so many people and it is just so quiet because of the reverence that they have for not only where they're at, but what's going on in front of them. And I think there are times that the production truck may pipe in some noises just to kind of break up that silence. Now, I will probably get a cease and desist from CBS on that, but again, true speculation. Don't know that as a fact or myth. Maybe we can do a follow-up podcast on this in the future.
I believe they've said that they're real bird noises. Like that, yes. They're not. Now, again, I mean, there is a way of recording, you know, birds chirping on the property mm-hmm. prior to the tournament or even during the tournament one time and then replaying those noises on the telecast. So that technically they would be on the property. Yes. But yeah. But no, that one's still kind of an unknown, I suppose.
Yeah, I know. We'll
and it's one of the one, I hear that one the most. Don't you hear that one a lot?
I do. I hear that a lot, but I show people, it's like, well, there's birds over there in the tree. You cannot have this many tree without birds. I mean, yes, Augusta National. Now, I do know one thing. This is on a separate side, but Augusta National does actually contract out to have snakes and, I guess the southern word, varmints, taken care of during the whole tournament. They have multiple people on call that can come out if there is a snake, if there is a possum or anything that gets through the gates that can actually take that animal or take that thing out of the grounds and actually take care of the whatever it may be. So,
yeah, that one makes a lot of sense. Absolutely.
It really does. Yeah, because, I mean, you don't want you know, again, you don't want snakes going across the green on 12 in order during the middle of the tournament. So they definitely have a contingent of people to take care of that. So let's get into the next one. You can't take photos at Augusta National as a guest.
Yeah, this one's a unique one because it's actually a myth. So you can have, as a guest of Augusta National, you can have your cell phone on you. You cannot take calls. You can't text. But you should turn all of that off, but you are allowed to take photos of your round. Now, the caveat being they are absolutely forbidden for use outside of your own personal use and viewing use. There's no way where you can put that on social media. That is forbidden, but mm-hmm. you can take photos of your round and, you know, 12th hole, 13th hole, all those famous places at Augusta National, you are allowed to take photos outside of, I believe, the clubhouse.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, trust me, there are things within the clubhouse that would make your mouth drop. And I think I might touch on some of them here, but it's a magical place. It really is.
It is. So since it is so magical, sometimes you have to do certain things in order to make it magical,
sure.
which always gets into this next one. Augusta National dyes the ponds to get ready for the Masters.
Yeah. So I didn't know this one. So I actually did a little research and mind you, if you know more than I'm okay with this, but yeah. I did a little research into this and according to Golf Digest, they tested the water on at least one of the holes in 1996 and found food dye. Now I can't speak to the veracity of the testing or that outcome and whether it's the case today, but they say in 1996, they found food coloring in the water to make it look more clear. I will say this, when I've played Augusta National, it's mm-hmm. stunningly beautiful. The water is extremely clear, and I'm pretty sure there wasn't food coloring in it then.
Right. I don't think they, if they do, it's probably minimal amounts, but
I feel like that doesn't happen anymore, right?
I mean, I don't think that happens anymore. They use that kind of dam area now. You see it a lot. It's kind of that bridge area behind, but they use that dam area, I think, in order to filter out a lot of the debris and stuff that would come from
left of 11. You're talking about, right?
Exactly. Out of Ray's Creek. That's outside of the property. Of course, they can control with whatever comes into the property, but they also need to filter and kind of take care of everything outside the property. So a lot of people don't realize that Ray's Creek actually runs through neighborhoods and, you know, through Augusta Country Club and through other parts of Augusta. They just think, oh, it's Ray's Creek. It just flows through Augusta National. No, that's incorrect. It actually flows quite a bit through Augusta properties around the actual city of Augusta. So, all right. And this is the one I hear all the time for the younger generation. You can't wear your hat backwards at the Masters.
I believe this to be true. What do you say, Greg?
You know, I think...
I feel like I've seen somebody with their hat backwards.
Yeah. You know, I think that so many people have a reverence for it that they just respect the rules.
You don't see it?
Yeah, I don't see that a lot. Now, I will say the one thing that kind of amazes me are the people that show up as first-time patrons and try to bring in a green blazer or jacket.
Oh, yeah. That, don't do that, folks. Don't do that at home.
Don't do that. Have the same respect and reverence. You know, I know that there was I think I have to go back to it, but I think there was a beer company that was going to pay somebody to wear a red blazer during the Masters, I think about a year or two ago. I'd have to go back and check on that story, Connor, but no, just out of reverence for the place and what it is, don't bring in a green blazer, green jacket. It's okay, or like a sport jacket. Don't wear that. You're more than welcome to wear a, you know, green
sweater,
windbreaker, polo, sweater, cardigan, whatever of that nature. But, you know, just kind of have some respect and reverence for where you're at is really kind of the best advice I have.
And I think to that point, too, I think if you're doing something apropos, I wouldn't be shocked if one of the members came to talk to you or a volunteer to let you know, please stop doing that. I know there has been at least one occasion where a patron was very vocal in his dislike for a certain player. And yes. I don't know if it was booing or, you know, rooting against him vocally. But I believe he was spoken to and, you know, asked to, let's treat all the, you know, the competitors out there equally and cheer for good play.
Exactly. And I think that is actually still printed on the back of the tickets and or badges at this point, is that quote from Bobby Jones every year, is that, you know, have reverence for each person that plays, each, you know, be respectful of all participants, even though you may not like them or what they come from, you know, you're still, you know, you're at the Masters, you're expected to show everybody kind of respect and decorum for what goes on there. And I think the old quote was, if you've come to the Masters, you've got game, you're not looking for your game.
Right. So, well, and I think this is probably most visible, I don't know, for the first time in a long time, maybe since the old rivalries between, you know, the old European Tour and the PGA Tour, but now it's LIV, right? And we had LIV contestants playing in the Masters. And I think, I remember that first year, I think there was some concern of how they would be treated in that first Masters once LIV was created. And they were treated respectfully, and I think everybody seemed to get along, at least, you know, on the television screens. There were no uproars from the fans, and I think that's something that makes the Masters very special.
It is. All right, so let's get back into those questions. You are allowed to have a collapsible chair, but it can't have armrests when going to the Masters.
I think that one's true. This is one of those great, you're going to know more than I do, but like there are collapsible chairs. I don't think I've ever noticed whether they had armrests or not, but I don't think they do. Is that correct?
That is correct. So that is the one stipulation, that when you bring in a chair, it cannot have armrest on them. You see a lot of those green chairs that are actually around the greens during the Masters, and there's reason for that. They're built strong enough to basically have a strong support, but it's also in order to kind of get everybody in a little bit closer. But you cannot bring in a chair that actually has foldable armrest. You'll be asked to basically either take it to your car or leave it there at the check-in area when you're there. But yeah, you cannot have a collapsible chair with armrest there at Augusta National.
Yeah, that was one of those questions that came up, and I was like, gosh, I think that's true. But you're like thinking through it. Mm-hmm. All the years you've been there, I'm like, have I ever seen somebody with armrests? And I was like, I don't think I have. But that makes sense. It just makes more room.
It does. It makes more room. It makes it available for patrons in order to get in and around. It also, most of those folding armchairs actually have cup holders. And those cup holders, if you really think about it, could actually be a catch for a ball during a tournament. I mean, yes, it's a very small chance, but again, kind of alleviating the possibility, if at all possible. So let's get to the next one. If you're a volunteer at the Masters, you get to play around there. Is that true or a myth?
Yeah, it's absolutely true, which is crazy. I mean, I think it's the secret's been out on this one for a bit. It's probably one of the best places to volunteer in probably all of sports, because you get to play this forbidden cathedral of golf. Now, there's a catch. Mm-hmm. You get to play it. You don't play right after the tournament. So if you live in California, there's a designated time you play it at the end of the year, or the end of their season. So you have to fly back to Augusta National to come play it. And there's really one day. And if it's the worst day on earth, like 80 mile per hour winds and, you know, pouring rain, that's your day. And yep, no rain checks.
Yeah, that is correct. I'm lucky enough to know a couple of people that volunteer for the tournament. And, you know, they say it's the greatest thing. They call it the highest green fees, because you have to pay for your time as you work the tournament, but you get to come back and actually play it before the course closes before summertime.
So there's another caveat here, is that it's, I'm not going to say impossible, but the list for people who want to volunteer at Augusta National for that very reason, it is extremely, like if you just say, I want to play Augusta National, I'm going to volunteer. It's yeah, not easy. The people who volunteer have the option to come back every year, and nobody ever wants to give up that option.
Exactly. And most of those people have been doing it for years. You know, it is a very select group. And, you know, again, a lot of times you don't get solicited by asking. You're basically asked if you want to be a volunteer, is some of the stuff that I've been told from some of the volunteers. But again, I really want to say this. The volunteers during the week of the Masters are some of the hardest working people out there. I really appreciate those people that can stand out in the sun, take care of the patrons, take care of all the items that come through, because you are basically watching play. You are making sure that it is one of the best tournaments in the world. And again, the chairman does it every year, but I've got to say it too. Thank you again to all those volunteers that work that tournament, because it is, if it's not for them, it just wouldn't happen. So
what else is really neat is the people who volunteer specifically on the holes, they tend to work those holes every single year. So yes, if you're lucky enough to go back, let's say you win the online option to get tickets, and you go on a Tuesday practice round, mm-hmm, and you meet, you know, someone that's really cool, say working the ropes on the third hole, and you can go back 2 years later, 3 years later, and that same person is in that same spot year after year. It's really special.
It really is. Now, I have learned that they will kind of rotate around the hole.
Didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah, you can. Some of them actually rotate around the hole during the tournament, but they usually pick the same spot. But yeah, they will work around the hole. Let's say, for example, like 15. You can actually start at the top and work your way down all the way basically to the green during the week. But yeah, you are assigned to that one hole, is my understanding, during your entire volunteer's time there. Speaking of volunteers and working the grounds, this is kind of
good segue,
but it always kind of comes up. The course was once roamed by cows.
Yeah, absolutely true. Yeah, during absolutely World War II. I mean, it's really amazing when you think of it. There's some. There's at least one photo. There have to be more, Greg. Right?
Right. There are. I think there's multiple photos throughout that time. With the actual what happened during World War II, they actually raised two different types of livestock on the grounds. One was actually beef cattle, and the other one was actually turkeys. The big thing that came from those two pieces of livestock to kind of help with the war effort was that the cows actually ate a lot of the flora there on the property.
Right.
And
no good deed, right? No good deed goes unpunished. Yeah.
No good deed goes unpunished, that is for certain. And with the additional cost of replacing the flowers and replacing the vegetation and everything else, the turkeys actually made a profit for Augusta National.
Oh, really? Time,
where the cows actually did not. So, because of that extra replacement cost.
Oh, my gosh. That's hilarious. You can, the masters where cows once roamed, right?
Exactly. But again, you think back to that war effort during World War II, and what a lot of people forget during that World War II era is that there were a lot of people here in the States that were supporting the war effort. So that meant rationing food, rationing rubber for tires, doing a lot of different things in order to help with that war effort. And the other thing that a lot of people don't realize that happened during that World War II is that Fort Gordon down there, now Fort Eisenhower, actually held German World War II prisoners there, and they actually helped construct the famous bridges on 12 and 13 that we now know as the Hogan and
how cool is that Nelson history
bridges. Exactly. So that is something that the German prisoners of war during that time when Augusta National was shut down actually helped construct the original bridges that went across 12 and now 13.
So, wow, very good history there.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll get into some of the other stuff about the course. If you're a patron, what about the sand in the bunker?
Don't touch it. I know you're tempted.
Because we hear it every year. It's like, that's not sand in the bunker. It's not this. So, Connor, what is it?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's not sand. It's quartz, and it comes from a special mining operation in North Carolina. And I know that people want to take home souvenirs. The best place to get those souvenirs is in the pro shop, by the way, or in the
merchandise.
Thank you. Merchandise buildings. They used to be tents.
The golf shop.
So, yeah, back in 2012, a gentleman by the name of Clayton Baker decided he wanted to take home his own little souvenir. Now, I've heard of people taking home pine cones. I've heard of people taking home, like, you know, straw and maybe a blade of grass or something like that. But Clayton took a daring attempt. I believe it was toward the end of the day. He ran out and scooped up some of the sand out of a bunker and tried to take it home with him. And he was arrested. And I think he had to pay a fine. He didn't have to go to jail, but it was a very public humiliation for Mr. Baker, who tried to scoop up some sand and take it home as a memento of his day at the Masters. So, long story short, don't take sand. It's not even sand, it's quartz, but leave it alone in the bunker. That's where it belongs.
Exactly. But yeah, we hear this a lot every year. This is probably the number one pop-up fact we hear a lot. Yes, it is not sand. It's not your normal sand that you can go out and get. It is quartz. It's a byproduct of the quartz process. And one of the reasons they do it is, again, with the drainage there. So when it rains at Augusta National during the tournament, they need the course in order to dry out very quickly. And that quartz kind of helps because with the chemical composition of it, it actually repels water. So that water goes down and it's not absorbed like normal sand. And plus, it's absolutely gorgeous. That white against that green.
So gorgeous.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's just phenomenal how it looks. But they've got plenty of that off to the side ready for the tournament. But if you've ever seen the course during the summertime when the course is actually closed, they actually pull all that product out, and there's actually kind of a black basin down in there that you can see. But they pull out all that quartz byproduct out during the summertime,
which is amazing.
Greens move. Yeah, I mean, it is. It's phenomenal. So getting into the course a little bit, Augusta National, is it the most remodeled course in history, Connor?
I think this has to be a fact, right?
Yeah.
Renovation. They're always making tweaks. I know, you know, I think I've gotten to this certainly in the Evolution of Augusta National podcast that we did two parts of years ago. It absolutely is. I think, you know, even as two historians here, Augusta National could never stay the way it was originally built. It's just it would have essentially be passed over by time as a 6,300 to 6,500 yard course. You know, the pros would be, you know, doing crazy things with its wide corridor. So the course, I think people need to understand, or I hope they understand, that it is very important that the course is renovated year after year for essentially 1 week of that year, because that is the 1 week, really two now with the women's amateur, where the course is our course, right? It's the most open golf club in the world for about 2 weeks time between the drive chip putt, the practice rounds, the women's amateur. It is one of the great gifts in golf that we get to see it every year for, it's probably not even 2 weeks, it's probably 10 days, but it has to evolve. And because of that, there are changes. I don't know if it's every year, but it's pretty close to every year to make the course that one of the best challenges for those 10 days in April.
Yeah. And that's their goal every year, is to make it the most challenging course and ready for the best players to compete on the best course at that time. And like you said, whether it's the Augusta National Women's Amateur or it's the actual Masters Tournament or the drive, chip, and putt, they want to make sure that that is the best course for those participants during that week. So, all right.
The next one's kind of funny.
It is. Finding the entrance to Augusta National Golf Club isn't easy.
Yeah, this one might just come down to me being an idiot. when you're going to the Masters, yes, it's super easy, right? Like finding, you know, the parking areas that are well lit up, there's signs everywhere, there's police officers guiding you the way, you can follow traffic. But when you're a guest of Augusta National, there's two things that are, I'll give you the inside look. One is you cannot arrive before your member. So you cannot show up and just expect to wait anywhere on the property without your member. So there has to be good communication. The second one is Magnolia Lane. It's not well advertised down Washington Road. And so Washington Road is a very busy road. So it is very common in my trips to Augusta National, as someone who is going to go on the property, not for the Masters, that I drive by it four times before I get the right spot. Because there's these, like, you know, there's like all these little, it's like a maintenance road, or there's this, and it's not, there's no sign. There's no, you know, there is, but it's like really small, and you're driving semi-fast on this road, and there's people behind you, so you don't want to come down to a crawl. So I don't think I've ever pulled into Augusta National the first time and got it right. And the other thing is, like, obviously you need to show your credentials. The other thing is, and maybe this goes into the next one, I am always amazed at the club of, as soon as you're on the property, everybody knows who you are.
Yes.
And so maybe ask the next one and I'll kind of dive into that.
No problem. So the next question we have, is it a stuffy club? Is it one of those traditional golf clubs where everything is just to be on guard and it's very stuffy by the members, I guess is the best.
Yeah. Word. I would say false. So what false. Amazes me is when you check in, there's a police officer, you know, they're going through your ID. And as soon as you get through that guard gate, everybody knows who you are. I mean, it's, I don't know how they do it. They must have an unbelievable staff that remembers everybody's face on cue. That is a talent that I do not have, by the way. And everyone's calling you, you know, Mr. Lewis, and, you know, your cabin's over here. Can I help you? Some of the friendliest members I've met. And everyone goes out of their way to give you this experience to learn more about the club, the history, the amazing things that have come through the tours of the clubhouse, meeting with Nathan, their historian, who is just an absolutely genuinely nice person. It is, I would call it, one of the least stuffy clubs that I've ever gone to. Now, mind you, the first time I went there, I was on eggshells. I mean, it's Augusta National. It's, you know, it's an intimidating experience to walk upon that property and be somebody's guest. Yes. And it's a very calming experience once you go through it.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that, since you've been on the club grounds, is playing Augusta National way better than you could ever imagine?
Oh yeah. It is better. You have to get over your fear. I mean, I am not one who has fear over the first tee shot of the day. And I'll be honest with you, the first time I played there, I did not feel that fear, yet Duck hooked one into the trees. And I got in the trees and my caddy was like, you know, I'm looking for the safe route out to the fairway. And he goes, you didn't come here to lay up. And I just gave him a look like, really? Like, are we doing this today? Like, you're going to make me go through this like 6-inch window where I can see the green. He's like, did you come to lay up? And of course, I batted around the trees like 15 times before my ball found the ground. And I think I took a double or triple that first hole. And it was just like, oh dear, what did I just start? But it is, you know, as you can imagine, if you haven't played it, it's a magical place that really warms your heart. Not only and I get the same experience when I walk the property as a patron at the Masters. It's a special warm place for everybody who visits it. That's my take.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's one of those places that are very special, not only for the United States, but the world of golf in general. I mean, it is just different. And like I said, when you've been there multiple times, you're very grateful. You're very appreciative of everything and the ability to do a lot of those things. I would say that to our listeners that are listening throughout this who have never been to Augusta, you know, they've never been picked in the lottery, keep trying through the lottery. You know, eventually you will get picked. It's a long process. That's why they call it the lottery system. You know, there are things that the club does, and, you know, there are other aspects that you can go through. I think, honestly, one of the best run tournaments right now is their women's amateur final that they have. I mean, it really puts those ladies on a pedestal and really shows the world, you know, what this golf course can do for these ladies. And it's something else that you don't see during that tournament. You actually find out where the members' tees are. When you're watching it, you're like, oh, that's where the members tee off. They're not all the way back here like when they show the Masters tournament.
So. Yeah, and I won't speak for all the members of Augusta National. I wouldn't have that. No. I would never go that far. But the few that I know and know fairly well, they are so proud. Like, listen, they love the Masters, but their pride and joy seems to be the women's amateur, the Augusta women's amateur. Like, all I hear is just glowing things about how much they love hosting those amateur, you know, women. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and I was very happy a couple years ago. I got to watch Latana Stone is a member of one of the clubs I'm here at in the Tampa Bay region, Buckhorn. Mm-hmm. And she came in second. She had the lead, I think, through 16 holes. And what a magical experience. I had my daughter out there who is a huge fan of Latana. I had my son and my daughter's friend were there and they were cheering on Latana. It was just a special occasion to see, you know, it was, I think, the second year of the tournament, to see those ladies enjoy the challenge of Augusta National and the spotlight at the home of the Masters. So amazing. You know, and to that point, you know, I kind of got off the subject a little bit, but, you know, when we talk about Stuffy, the club is not fancy. You know, if you listen to the podcast I did on Augusta National with Ben Wright, he does a very good job telling the story about how the interior of the clubhouse is extremely modest. Yes. It is welcoming. It is warm. You know, you don't see Parisian, you know, rugs. You don't see, you know, fine mahogany leather like you might expect going through, you know, a place like Augusta National. That just doesn't exist at Augusta National. And there is an amazing story about its design that I cannot tell on the podcast. So if you ever catch me one-on-one, I will be happy to share the story if I can about the design of the interior and how it came to be. But it was shared in confidence. I'll keep it in confidence from off from the masses.
Right. Now that'll be fine, Connor. But man, this has been a great podcast, Connor. I love the fact that we've been able to kind of shed some lights on some of the facts and myths and everything else. Any other random myths that you know about or you've heard over the years about either the Masters or Augusta National?
Well, you know, I'll give you like a couple before we go. I'd say one, I got a question. It was kind of late in the game and someone asked me if Frank Stranahan really was banned from the Masters for playing two balls in a practice round. And the answer is yes, but we wouldn't call it a ban. He was not able to play in the tournament and he did get to come back the following year. That was with Cliff Roberts, I think, was fairly upset that he gave Frank Stranahan, by the way, was like one of the greatest amateur golfers of all time. Yep. And he was very, headstrong. Is that a good word?
Headstrong.
Yeah. If you listen to the, one of the podcasts we did about him challenging, Byron Nelson to a match because he thought he was better than Byron Nelson. It's an all-time favorite story of mine, but he, you know, was a weightlifter, you know, big, strong guy, believed in that before everybody else did. And Cliff saw him, you know, playing two balls from the fairway during a practice round. He said, "We don't do that here at the club." And then I think, you know, the very next year they caught him doing it and he asked him to leave the property. Like, listen, if Cliff or Bob Jones tells you something, I think it's probably a safe bet you should listen. Yes, you know, I think that's a pretty good one. The other one that I like to tell is, when you're a guest at Augusta National and you go into the main dining room, in the left-hand corner of that dining room are Bobby Jones's irons that they used to win the Grand Slam. And there are many sacred things in the clubhouse of Augusta National, but for me, that ranks up there with awe. Each time I've had the pleasure of being there, I stand in front of that case and just wonder. And I am a huge Bob Jones fan, obviously a huge fan of Augusta National, but to have that history preserved at Augusta National and those clubs that did something that nobody had done before and nobody's done since was just remarkable in this display case that I think otherwise is much like the clubhouse, you know, very subdued, right? You know, if that's in my club, Bel Air, for instance, that is like front and center. As soon as you walk in the, you know, that's where you'd want to put that, right? Yes. And at Augusta National, there's nothing like that. I mean, the membership, I feel, is kind of front and center and everything else is the overall storytelling at the club is so expertly done that none of it is ever in your face. It's done so tastefully to tell the story of the early beginnings of the club, the early beginnings of the Masters, and how we got to where we are today. And again, their club historian, Nathan, is so spectacular at his job and storytelling that, you know, like I said, if you ever get the chance, and I hope you do, those listening at home, take the opportunity to really soak in the artifacts that are on display there, because they are just phenomenal. Just like Augusta National, just like the Masters. I think everything is just so unbelievably well done. It will always be a place of reverence for me.
Yeah. Yeah. The only other one I've ever heard, and this one is kind of the long shot, and I don't know if this is truth or fact, but it's crazy enough to be, I guess, more of a myth than anything, is that the Ark of the Covenant is actually stored at the basement of Augusta National.
Wow. That's why it's so pretty. I have never heard that. Wow.
I know. I had to laugh. I think it truly is a myth for certain, but I do know that in the basement of Augusta National, it does house one of the largest wine collections in
the world. I've seen it. It's so, and it is amazing.
It is absolutely amazing. Almost any type of wine, if you are a wine connoisseur, they are well known for their wine list. Their bourbons and scotches and things are just some of the rarest in the world that you can find. But as part of Ark of the Covenant, probably not there, but definitely you can definitely take a cup and definitely enjoy down in the basement.
I had never heard that one, oddly enough. I will say this, outside of the wine cellar, there is a beautiful, I guess it's a tasting table, I suppose you'd call it, but it's actually made from the fallen Eisenhower tree. Mm. And that table itself is another work of art. Mm-hmm. It is, they don't do anything poorly at Augusta National.
No.
I mean, everything is, without being flashy or overdone, nothing gets to that level. But I'd say they seem to always hit all of the important details, whether it's storytelling, sharing their history, you know, the wine room, just the cabins, you know, it's just, it's, again, I keep using the word, but it's a magical place. I did not see the Ark of the Covenants. The Covenant,
yeah,
sorry.
No. I've heard that it's the Ark of the Covenant, and what's the other? The Cup of Christ is down there.
So wow. Heavy hitters at Augusta, right?
I had to laugh because I was like, that's a little much. Now, I'm not sure. I mean, I think we get too wrapped up in the whole Indiana Jones and artifact world when it comes to that, but I do not. I think that is actually a huge myth, and I just share that at the end because I've heard that, and I just had to laugh at it a few times.
I should have said something like, "Well, I can't talk about it," but
yeah,
that would have been the. I might have to edit that and say I might go, "I can't talk about that." However,
yeah, no, that's all right. But no, Connor, this has been a great time. I hope the listeners do enjoy this. It is one of those fun times of year where we all get ready for Augusta National and the Masters. And hopefully the listeners out there can enjoy this podcast and kind of look at it and also have a little bit of fun with it too this year. So,
and speaking of fun, by the time this podcast comes out, and if you're a subscriber to the Society Golf newsletter, you can go back and read this issue of the Society newsletter where Greg writes an article, The History of the Masters Gnome, which I tell you what, it's a perfectly timed article because some of my articles are, you know, pretty serious about it. And I think that is one of these really cool kind of quote unquote new to history stories that I think that people are going to absolutely love, Greg. It's such a well done.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Connor. But no, hopefully the listeners will enjoy it. There's a lot of questions about the Masters Gnome and when it started and why is it so popular. And
why does it look like me is one of the things you didn't answer. Yeah. That should be a myth, you know, that we covered here. Is the Master Gnome Connor Lewis of the Society of Golf Historians?
I will say, after the picture you sent me the other day with the cardigan for the new 2024,
it's close.
Masters, it's pretty close.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm literally, now I would never wear a green jacket on that property, but I may dress up like the Masters Gnome this year just to see if I can get one. And if worst case scenario, someone actually said if they saw me dressing like that, they'd have me autograph their gnome. But no, I think I might, listen, if the weather if the weather works, because you know this too. I mean, it could be high 40s or it could be 85 degrees. You never know what you're going to get. If it's in that kind of 60s to high 70s, I will wear it just to embarrass my kids and to pay homage to the history of the Masters gnome. By the way, it's a really sharp outfit this year. Am I wrong?
No, it really is.
That gnome's got style.
It does. And I think it kind of harkens back to the olden times. It kind of harkens back to Arnold Palmer with his cardigan. And I think it's a little bit of tradition mixed in with the green and white striped tie. It does have the traditional bucket hat and the plaid pants, which is a nice touch. But overall, I think it kind of just addresses, you know, kind of what we enjoy with the Masters every year. It's kind of this dress up scene. Augusta National and the Masters has put out these videos that their tagline is, you know, bring your best. And that's what they want to show, is they want everybody to bring your best outfits, bring your best, you know, thing, because this is a huge event. You know, the golf world and the sports world looks at Augusta National after March Madness that it is the it thing. Even people that don't watch golf tune in and watch the Masters. So it is kind of the biggest thing that goes on. And it always happens, luckily for us, in the same place every year.
So. Yeah, we're very lucky. Well, thank you so much, Greg, for joining us. I really appreciate your time today.
As always, Connor, appreciate you and all you do for the Society of Golf Historians and the listeners out there on this podcast.
Thank you for listening to this two-part podcast on the myths of the Masters. We started with assassinations and ended with the Ark of the Covenant and the Holy Grail. I promise you won't find another podcast that gives you that kind of depth of coverage. If you have any comments or ideas for future podcasts, you can reach me at the Society of Golf Historians at gmail.com. Check out our newsletter. This week's issue is about the Augusta National Shoeshine Caddy, who became the lightweight boxing champion of the world. Until next time, yours in golf history, this is Connor T. Lewis.